It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 416 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. This week I have a great interview with Chad Stroll, one of the important creative forces behind Infinity, A Tale of the Inferno, which some people will recognize as putting a new spin or a new exploration into a classic story. We talk about how the book came to be, about how he assembled the team that's making it, and how he reacted when he first got the news that he'd been picked up by a publishing company. We talk about what he also has coming in the future, as well as conventions, among other things. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Chad Stroll, creator of a really fascinating comic called Infinity, A Tale of the Inferno. And obviously this was inspired by Dante's Inferno. So, Chad, how you doing?
Pretty good. Just enjoying this wet weather day here in southeastern Ohio.
So. Oh, boy. We're down here. I live in Florida, and it's a little warmer, but it's on the way down tonight. Just that people will be able to figure out if they know their weather, where we are, and what day we're talking. But we always like to talk a little ahead of time just to make sure we get it all together. So
yeah.
I discovered your stuff at Baltimore Comic Con, I think, this past year. And you made the book available to me, which I really enjoyed. So do me a favor. I was looking at your website, and there was a funny little bit in there where you said, "I am now a published writer." Comixology, I think, picked up the book. So there's a little bit of history we probably need to get into. You turned it into Comixology, and that came first.
Well, Caliber Comics came first.
Okay.
So I've spent many years writing, doing whatever. I've done a little bit of prose work, short stories, you know, submitted those off. Still always that novel that needs to be written someday. And then dabbled in screenplays for a little while a few years back. Well, let me rewind a little bit. Because a buddy of mine was doing independent comics, he was going to conventions and doing stuff like that. He asked me if I had anything. He had an artist that he was working with. He asked me if I had anything that this artist could work on while he was in the middle of in between projects. Mm-hmm. So I hooked up with this other artist and had a story that we did, and I was doing the convention scene for a little while, self-published. Kind of got burned out on that a little bit, and then jumped into writing screenplays for a while, just kind of researching on even how to do that, how to craft things and do it the right way, and then started jumping in and submitting stuff off to managers and agents and stuff like that out in Hollywood, and kind of got my feet wet doing that. Got a little bit of traction doing that. Even got read by Circle of Confusion. They they handle like The Walking Dead and different stuff like that. So kind of had an open door submission through them. It ended up kind of, once again, even sort of fell off that wagon for a little bit. And then just one year, I want to say it was about 3 years ago, out in New York, I was just sort of New York Comic Con walking around a little bit and just looking at stuff and thought, yeah, I think I might give this a try again. So I actually took some of those screenplay ideas that I had had. I had did about eight different screenplays at the time that I still kind of have on the shelf waiting to do things with. And decided to jump back into it. And then I was just looking around at artists and found Camille and Lucas. I had found them just through, I can't remember what site it was even on, but saw their art And talking to my girlfriend about it, and I mean, it was the question I asked was, "Do I like this art?" You know, it was because it is very, it's very different. You know, it's got that sort of I had given it this like acid trippy type of description is what it was. Mm-hmm. And I had told her at the time, I said, I think this would be great for Inferno. Mm-hmm. I said, I'll think I'll do that. Because mm-hmm. that was the original working title was Inferno.
Right.
And so then I self-published the first issue and was doing some conventions and stuff. And then it was not this past New York Comic Con, but the year before that, that I ran into Andrea, the editor for Caliber out there, showed him the first issue, and he asked me to send him more. And once the weekend was over, so he said, if it reads as good as it looks, then we'll talk. And so I sent him that first issue, and one thing led to another, and Caliber picked it up. And they had already had a title called Inferno, so I had to change the title of it. And so that's how Infinity came about. Mm-hmm. And then, so Caliber, it was through them that they published the physical book and released it on through their site, plus through Amazon, different stuff like that. But then they also did the 6-issue release through Comixology.
Mm. Cool.
And that was where the whole by me saying, you know, I had self-published many times, mm-hmm. but I had never got to the point to where someone else published me. So that was sort of that geek trip kind of moment there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, of course, the first time, I mean, you know, I'm an editor for a independent comic. Oh, I can't say independent anymore. It's picked up by Scout. But the first time you see your characters drawn, the first time you see a page, you know, and then when you get the first comic, there's this kind of out-of-body experience that you go through. It's no longer just in your head, it's down on the paper, and it's just one of those great moments as a creator, you know, oh my gosh, I created something that exists, you know, kind of stuff.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Scout, is that who you said?
Yeah, it's Scout. Scout. It's called Stouty Bunny, and you know, Andrea Molinari is a good friend of mine, actually.
Okay, and that's funny. I've looked at Stouty Bunny, and I actually spoke that, I don't know if it was that year, it might have been the year before that, I had shown some stuff to Brendan.
Brendan Deneen, yep, he's the head of
school. Yeah, and me and him had a few email conversations, but none of the titles I had at the time that I was sending his way was what they were looking for. But so I'd ask him the same thing and say, hey, well, can I continue to send stuff? Is it good enough to send? And he was like, oh, yeah, absolutely, keep sending stuff. So. Cool. I just haven't got around to doing that just yet. So. Yeah.
Caliber is a great company because they take chances. They do stories mm-hmm. that maybe, like particularly Marvel or DC, wouldn't be interested in. But the story of yours is really good. Like we said, it's based on the Dante's Inferno, and it's a really interesting tale. Why don't you say what the story's about so people know what the book is dealing with?
So it's a sort of a modern spin on it is one of the ways I describe it. It is based on Dante's Inferno, and mostly in that regard, it's the nine circles of hell. Mm-hmm. And, it's also the journey of Dante, but in this regard, it's Detective John Dante, who is trying to rescue the soul of his wife, Beatrice, and Triss for short. Mm-hmm. And she has been taken to hell by a serial killer who was actually an immortal, like, soul collector for the devil, I guess, if you want to put it that way, mm-hmm. who actually took a personal interest in Dante because Dante got too close to him in an investigation of, you know, these homicides and stuff. So just in a sort of arrogant move, Alistair Thorne, who is this collector, ends up taking Dante's wife, mm-hmm. and he apparently didn't realize the tenacity of John Dante and the willingness to go that extra mile to get her back. Mm-hmm. Nope. And so
well, the way it starts is a big surprise right away, let's just say. I don't know if I probably shouldn't spoil it, but let's just say that when Dante realizes there's something he needs to do in order to save his wife, he does it. And, you know, I was very surprised at that. He does something that most of us probably would consider not doing.
It's a great, it's just a stunner opener. And then, you know, right from there, it set me back a little bit. So I had to, you know, I realized all of a sudden, this is not going to be something I know it's going to happen, which is a thing I hate in comics. I hate when I know, when I can sit there and say, okay, now they're going to do this, now they're going to do that. I have no concept what you're going to do in this whole book. It's really just an amazing, just great
story. Well, and that's actually a good, so that opening scene that you're referring to, and I'll try real hard not to spoil it myself here and talk about it, but I've used this example in a writing class at local libraries, and we had discussed some things, and some people had asked me, you know, the quintessential question is, well, how do you get your ideas? And I don't really have a good answer for that. I was like, well, you just always, you read, you think, you watch, you do, you know, that kind of thing. And so in this situation, that opening scene, I'm driving home from work one day, and that scene began to play out in my mind. I had no idea who these two people were. I had no idea what they were doing. I had no idea what was happening. And then that ending played out for me, that ending of that scene, and I was like, wow. And it's interesting that you say it was kind of, is that it kind of blew you away and you wondered what happens next? Well, that's actually what happened to me.
Wow.
I was sort of like, well, what happens next?
Cool.
and it was a couple of weeks later that I just happened to be going through the classical section at the local library and walking down through there and saw Dante's Inferno jump out at me and went, ah, I know what they're doing. And that's where it began.
Very cool, very cool. Now, the title, of course, has a little something to do with the, I don't know if it, again, I worry about spoiling stuff, but it's the word infinity, and there's an infinity symbol underneath it, and that has something to do with the story as well, which I really like.
Exactly.
I mean, obviously that was a part of the story before you had to change the name.
Yeah, the second title, this new title actually was just derived from the story itself. I thought, you know, that seemed to be the obvious next move after changing it from just Inferno. Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, Dante has to deal with all kinds of supernatural goings-on, creatures of all sorts. The interesting thing, he's considered an immortal serial killer, the guy that murders his wife, I have not heard that concept before. That was another surprise to me. About doing that. I mean, how did that concept come? Because, you know, you hear serial killers, usually those kind of people, the serial killers want to die. You know, they've done
so
much, done a happy, but this one is an immortal one. I mean,
yeah, immortality in the sake that his soul never dies, I guess. The body can, but the soul never does. The soul is eternal. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where the infinity symbol that these things have come in. And, I'm not sure how to, that's once again, in the whole writing process, that was sort of a thing that came about after the development of the story. When I realized what I was doing with the story, I thought, okay, well, it was almost like the character, was revealing himself to me as I was writing it. So I kind of always dig when that kind of happens.
See, I'm always fascinated by that kind of creative process. I haven't reached that level. I'm an editor. I can look at stuff and I can tell you what works and what doesn't. But to come up with it is something I can't do. And I often talk about that. That leap to writing and creating is something that my head just doesn't seem to make. So I hear you say that kind of stuff, and I'm a little jealous in a sense because I can't do that. That doesn't happen in my head. I'm really happy to hear that because I think that's how some of the best stories are created, is that kind of process.
So not to compare myself to, you know, Stephen King in On Writing, he basically says stories aren't created things, they're found. And so it's funny because in conversations I've had with other people when I talk about stuff or where a story is going, I tend to say something that I don't even realize it's been pointed out to me what I say, but I always say, well, I found out what happens to this character, or I found out what they're going to do. And somebody always goes, what do you mean you found out? Don't you decide? And I'm like, no. So it's something along those lines where it's like, ultimately, yes, we know I'm deciding it, but I think it's something deeper within me that's making that decision before I even realize I'm doing it.
It's the process. It's something in your head. Well, I always tell the story. There's a guy in the UK who was watching a documentary on slaughtering pigs, and he came up with a comic concept out of it. It was called Slaughterman's Creed. And the really interesting thing that he did, it was like a 4-issue series. At the end of issue 2, he killed the main character.
Okay, yeah.
I was sitting there going like, no, what? There's 2 more books to go. What are we going to do? Well, he had a thing all in mind. See, that kind of storytelling to me is fun. This is where like indie comics are such a joy.
Yeah.
You don't have to put Batman back where he is. You know, so somebody else can write the next issue. You get to tell the story with your characters and the way that they live in your head. You know, let's just say certain people don't. Not everybody makes it through everything.
Yeah, you can. You kind of. I mean, and that, I find that to be the fascinating thing, and that's probably why I've liked writing ever since I was a little kid. In the sense of that, you can decide. You know, it's these are your creations. These are your characters. These are your moments that. You know, I enjoy watching and reading other people's stuff just the same as anybody else, but and that's probably like you even said, it came from not really a form of jealousy, but a form of having that kind of power of thinking, being so fascinated by where the other stories come from and trying to dig in and kind of make my own as well.
Mm-hmm. It's a talent.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess. Yeah.
It's an ability. So. It's not all of us have it, so I treasure it when I find it, and I think that's a great way to, you know, to know that the stories that you're coming up with come along that route.
So, and it's a cultivated one. I mean, it's like exercise. You build muscles. You do, you know, and I've given that to try to give that advice to other people too, and like, you know, just to write out a beat sheet or a simple one-page story, but also, you know, just have those simple rules, beginning, middle, end, start there, then find ways to elaborate, find ways to build off of it, to mess with expectations, to it's just practice, I guess.
The fun thing for me is that you know where you're going. And when you read something where that's the case, you really can enjoy, you know, you can sit back and say, okay, we're heading someplace, and he knows where we're going, or the writer or author knows where we're going, so you can sit back and enjoy the ride. There are too many writers that don't know where they're going. They're kind of meandering.
I think it's very important. Yeah, it's very important, and you might hear this a lot, but it's always know where, that's that concept you just said, always know where your ending is. Know your ending. If you know where you're ending, you know how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you can still find the fun ways. I mean, there's multiple, you know, there's all kinds of different roads that lead to different cities kind of thing, but you can always end up in the same place. So that's, the journey is fun, but know where you're headed, and that's pretty important.
Now, you talked about that you brought the artist on board. How long did it take for you to put Infinity together? Because as I was looking online, it looks like it came out in individual issues, and now it's collected. How did that process go?
It was very slow. And so because of the finances involved and stuff, so we settled on an agreement to do basically a page a week. So that's ultimately, I don't know what it comes down to, 100 and some pages. So it took about 2 years to do it at that speed. Once Caliber picked it up and wanted to release it, though, we sped it up a little bit there at the end. I think the last issue ended up taking about 2 months to do, so we sped it up a lot quicker. Doing like 3 pages a week kind of a thing. Once we actually had an idea where it was going to be and go, cause all through the time while we were just making it, I was doing, as I said, the self-publish. I had self-published the first issue, did some cons, you know, sold a little bit of that. So anybody out there has a copy of Inferno, number one, then yeah, that's going to be a pretty unique item because it'll never be seen again.
That's cool. Well, it's interesting.
And the original logo is an anagram, so if you turn it upside down, it still says Inferno.
Okay, that's cool. I have to take a look at that, because that's a fascinating thing about it. The thing to me is, it's interesting that the characters live in your head, because they, the same thing I got to experience when I read the book. I began to, you know, believe that these characters exist, you know, and that's always, and then you care about what's going on. You know, there are certain times when I feared for certain people, shall we say, and that made me want to turn the page and find, now what? I gotta keep going. I like the pacing. I thought the pacing was really good. You know, it's something. It doesn't. If there's ever going to be any sort of information coming out, doesn't take very long for that to happen. Then we're back to business, which I really liked, because you know some pages I get to a comic and I turn the page and I look and there's this gray blob of words on there, and
info dump. Yeah, big info dump.
Oh, and I look at it and I go, I think I can go on without that. So I move on. I move to the next page, and you know, with yours, I didn't get that. I really got a strong sense of, again, that going someplace of understanding the storytelling, and knowing the characters and knowing what's going to bother them and eventually bother us if we begin to like the characters. So I really like that about the whole book. I just thought it was really well put together like that.
Well, I'm glad it did that. I mean, yeah, that's always the goal. And then to touch on what you say about the big blobs of words, I'm not a huge fan of that at all. And you might have noticed, and there might be every now and then pages might have only had like maybe two or three word balloons on it, because I kind of feel like if the story can be told in pictures, then that's the way to do it. Now, I'm also not a fan of like the two-page spread that doesn't have anything on it, unless, you know, but that's only in floppy comics where you're kind of paying a premium for those kind of things. In a graphic novel, I think you got a little bit more leeway to do that kind of stuff.
There was an Ultimate Fantastic Four issue where they spent the entire issue getting to the Fantastic Car and flying out of the building. And I remember reading and thinking, wow, I paid how much to watch them get in the Fantastic Car and fly out of the building? I thought, I don't know.
Yeah, you can do that in two panels.
Yeah, that's tricks. And so I remember thinking that was just, I'm not surprised the Ultimate line doesn't exist anymore, because a lot of that went on in there. But your book really has this organic feel to it, and a very, you know, you feel for Dante a lot of the time, and the whole interaction with the wife and the musician that he runs into, who I really liked. That was another character that, to me, I could feel like this was a TV show or a movie, was what I got, because he really lived and breathed, and I could see somebody doing that in real life. So that character was another one of the ones I really liked in the book.
Yeah, Clarence Virgil, which, so anybody familiar with Dante's Inferno knows that the poet Virgil is the one who gives Dante the tour of hell. So the character here is a blues guitar player from, I believe, the 1940s, 1930s, somewhere around in that era, and has his own kind of tragic history and a parallel with his own wife, you know, of... And that's sort of what creates the bond between these two and their adventure together, so to speak.
See, that was interesting to me, that there was similarities between those two characters as they moved on. And let's just say that the musician, the end of his storyline is really surprising to me. When I read that, I was so shocked. I was shocked almost like, within every issue. There's at least one or two shocks. And we go along, and I was very surprised with what the musician did, because I thought that was the last thing he would do. So I love that.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, because he's hesitant at first to even be part of all this. So
now the characters, did you base them on like real life people when you turned them, you know, from Dante's Inferno into what's a more modern tale? Did you base the characters off somebody else? Was it your imagination? How did you design them?
No, not really. I think the blues guitar player, because that's just sort of it's one of those, almost like a cliche. One of the tropes of hell is the, you know, the guy who sort of sold his soul at the crossroads kind of thing. And I think that might have been how Clarence began, but then I decided, no, once again, that's too cliche. So he needs a new thing. So I thought he kept the personage of the blues guitar player, and also honestly, being Virgil, those are the modern poets in my mind. You know, that's so then he needed kind of a new reason why he was there. And then that all just sort of tied into the mythology of Dante's Hell, is that the first plane of existence, limbo, is basically for the souls who didn't try, who didn't, they just didn't aspire to be more.
Yeah, I read that, and that was a thing that really interested me, too. Because, you know, I always think that, like, in levels of hell, that there are, if that's real, then trying is not something someone's going to do in hell, was the thing. So when I read that, there was another surprise to me that you should try in hell to do things. And I thought that was very different. The thing I loved about this book is that it was so different from my expectations.
You kind of get the chance even at redemption, even after all redemption, even all hope of redemption is lost, you still have that opportunity.
Yeah, I like that. That's such a good book. I mean, it's like about 144 pages, I think it is. And, you know, so we're recording this on a weekend before it posts, but Andrea is out at Wizard World.
New Orleans this weekend, I believe.
And I see pictures of him selling this book. People hold up and they've bought the book, and you know, so they're going to be reading it and stuff like that. So it's always great because Andrea is a great person as far as, you know, when it comes to story construction, characters, when it comes to doing the promotions and going out and, you know, selling Caliber stuff. And he's selling your book out there, I see.
Yeah. And he was a huge fan. I mean, he edited. He helped me edit and did the read-throughs and did all that and gave me a lot of advice on things. But ultimately, I think he was a fan of the book even before an editor. So that was a good connection to make. And so then I have began, and the first issue just finished up. There's no commitments to it, so it's not like Caliber is committed to this. I'm just making it, but the first issue of Infinity, A Tale of the Purgatorio, is now finished.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
really?
And so Shepard makes a cameo appearance in the first few pages.
Oh, of course. Yeah, well, that's another way to make Andrea happy, I would say. Is give his character a little run. Because I love that book, by the way. He asked for a quote from me, what I thought of the book, and I sent it to him so he could use it. Because I always like to be quoted when I can. You know, if I can't write the story, at least I can say what a great story it is. he's supposed to do that in one of the collections or something that's coming. So I make sure to do that. But that's going to be cool. So yeah, one of the great things, I think, is you can do that, especially if you have, you know, a good relationship with the creator of the character, to let them come in and do something in your book, which is, you know, a great way to do it. I think that's a smart idea. That's really cool.
And he had asked me after this was all completed, he had asked me if there was going to be a sequel, if there was going to be a continuation. And at the time, I was like, no, I don't think so. I was like, I don't have a story. So we talked a little bit, and he actually sent me some information and gave me, because he's into, you know, that's his kind of specialty, is the mythology and the religious aspects of things. So he sent me some information on purgatory, because I'm sure it was probably something in much of his research doing the Shepherd. And so I just started reading through and sifting through all that, and suddenly it started to happen. It started to become, interestingly enough, so the Inferno, each circle of hell is tied to specific sins, but then each stage of purgatory is also tied, and specifically to the seven deadly sins. And so the story began to form in my mind, and we'll get to see more of Carl, which is Dante's partner in this first one. So the story will be more about him and what happens after the fallout.
Okay. Because I'm fascinated as to how you're going to move on from after the way the first book ends.
It begins in the same place. So we're going to be able to go back to that first scene, and we won't lead on to what happens in that first scene. But the beginning of Carl's story takes place at the, basically there's caution tape, police lights going on, everything like that. And it's the aftermath of what Dante has done. And it starts from there.
Hmm. works. He's not going to do the same thing that Dante did, is he?
No.
Okay. Because yikes, I wince a lot again. But that's the thing about the creative process. And yours, you probably got something else already in mind that's going to make things memorable and throw us off balance, so we can't figure out what.
About halfway through Infinity, Dante. Well, maybe not even halfway. It's later towards the. Well, Dante makes a deal with something about halfway through, and then fulfills that deal towards the end. Well, that's going to have ramifications in the real world, in our world. Mm-hmm. Once that sound is done, I guess we'll say.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then that's where Purgatorio will take place, which ultimately, if everything works out right, then we'll have A Tale of Paradise. Finish of a trilogy, hopefully.
Cool. Wow. So are you going to do the individual issues in the second one?
Potentially, yeah. Okay. I mean, that's probably something I could probably do, since I said there's... I think, first off, because of carrying the same title, I probably should go ahead and talk to Eric at Calibre and see what they want to do with it first, get their, you know, get their input if they want to run with it, since I'm guessing it probably still ties into the product itself. They should probably have first call on what it does.
Because I'm seeing a lot of people these days not do the floppy issues and just going straight to trade. It's a couple image books that are doing that I was reading about, and I'm kind of fascinated because, you know, some of us have grown up with floppies and we're so used to that. And I buy the trades usually because I like the story and I want to keep the whole story. But, you know, it's just an interesting thing to figure. I'm not sure. Because, like, for example, I think Source Point Press, they have been doing trades largely. And now they're actually doing individual issues on some of them, like Floppy Cop and some other stuff. So it's an interesting thing. I mean, right now the industry is kind of, we don't know quite where we're going to be when we grow up, kind of.
Yeah. And I'd love to see these printed in... and maybe it's something I'll be able to do on my own, perhaps, or different things like that. But to get the six individual issues printed, because Camille did some pretty great covers, I think. They're in the back of the book to see what each of the covers look like. Yeah, that would be kind of neat just to see those in real life, I guess.
So it's the same artist, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. So that'll be good to give him a chance to do a different level. It's different stuff. The one thing I'm really fascinated is the use of color and shape that he's doing with that. I mean, what was your reaction when you started getting pages back and you started to see how he was going to do it?
I was thrilled. So how our process works is they'll send me some sketchups, basically real quick sketches of different things. And then I'm also not as good, but I've done some art and stuff like that too. So, you know, if I kind of think a different angle or more of a dynamic action or a difference in pose or different stuff like that, I'll sketch up something on it, send back to them, and then so we collaborate a lot of how it's laid out. Which, as I was going, that might have happened maybe three or four times in the first issue. Then it went down to like two, and then it just got to the point where these guys were kind of reading my mind, I think. Of what was happening.
See, that's when your team is working, is when you guys are in sync so well that you're both happy and you don't have to go through a lot of revision and stuff like that. Because that's
exactly, yeah. And it's been, I mean, it's like clockwork. I mean, I hate to even really say much about it and somehow curse a good thing, but now these Camille Butcher, who does primarily the art, and Lucas, who does a lot of the lettering and just some of the layouts and stuff, they've been fantastic. I mean, just week after week, never late, never behind, never, no excuses, just here's your page.
Wow. Boy, that's cool. Well, that's a nice thing, because I hate to tell you, like I said before, reality gets in the way of comic books, and I've seen some people, you know, fall behind, and boy, you know, that's a hard thing to catch back up with.
Well, and I'm experiencing that with my current project that I'm working on right now. It's like I started off with one artist, then I went to another, then I had to find a different artist, and so it's a matter of still trying to get those stylistic to stay the same, but, you know, and then it's like every time I seem like I'm getting some headway, it's like, oh, this artist isn't working out. Now it looks like I'm going to be back to one of my other artists that was in it before who's back. And once, you know, it's just like, oh my gosh.
Consistency though is tough. As there was, like, for example, Bob Sally does a Salvagers, and the main artist who was there all of a sudden had to go off and do other things, but he was kind of like overseeing what other people do. And they found a good artist who actually followed the style real well. But,
and that's what I look for, yeah. Somebody whose style wasn't too jarring. That way, when you notice, if you notice it happens, because I do all the coloring, so that's one thing I can kind of at least keep the shading and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I'll be doing the coloring on that. But on Infinity, I didn't have to do anything. They did the coloring. They did the... I think they color in as part of their process. Their process is very alien to me on how they do it. I think they do it on like an iPad somehow. And,
oh, wow.
And I don't even think they do, like, I'm used to doing layers beneath things. So I have line art, colors under it, you know, different things like that. It looks like they build on layers, how they do their art. I would lose my mind trying to even do that.
Yeah, see, layers to me, and I've taken Photoshop and tried to figure all this stuff, and people say, oh, it's just layers, and then it's like all of a sudden this strange world opens up. What goes where, and how does this all line up? I don't get it. And if you push the eye, the layer is seen, but it's still there if you turn it off. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I said somebody better... Because Photoshop is the kind of thing that nobody in this world knows everything that Photoshop can do.
Exactly. Yeah,
I'm convinced of it.
I am a doggy paddler of Photoshop, and some people are scuba divers. Yeah.
So that's cool. Okay, so this book is out and being sold. Obviously, you've seen Andrea selling them at Wizard World New Orleans. What's your schedule like as far as you said you've got the first issue is starting to go and you guys are going to work this out. Do you have any idea when things are going to start to be available to the public?
For the any future books, you mean?
Yeah.
Nothing set in stone just yet. So I got a few steps in the process you know, information seeking in a sense before I know what direction I can even take it. But sometime this year, I mean, that would be my ultimate guess.
Now, do you Kickstarter this stuff?
No, because I don't know how to do that just yet. So okay. I'm still kind of researching that process and figure it out to see if I'm terrified that, you know, that I'd have like 10 people put money in and just kind of crush my soul a little bit. So I'm hoping to kind of maybe develop, if nothing else, a sort of a small following, perhaps, and then try the Kickstarter to see what might come about.
Because Kickstarter helps things make things happen, which is, to me...
Yeah.
I often say here that I regret the Kickstarter came so late in the process of making comics. I always worry about the things that we could have read if Kickstarter been around before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we missed all these stories. There were all these great stories that we could have read that we'll never see because they couldn't happen because Kickstarter and crowdfunding wasn't there to do it.
That's the biggest thing. That's the biggest hurdle in making comics like that is just the budget, the finances behind it kind of thing. And that's why this was, as I said, a week at a time. It was sort of, that's all I could do.
Yeah.
But that would be awesome to have a Kickstarter fund kick in and have the budget to actually, you know, play forward rather than backward in a way.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one other quick thing that I like to tell people is that somebody did a study as to like sales. You know, they said Marvel was still the number one comic book, you know, sales company. The second company was actually was Kickstarter. Ahead of Image,
DC,
and I was stunned when I read that because I thought, because there are a lot of people who buy, you know, and fandoms get developed out there, you know, which is a great thing to do. So, you know, it's if you don't need it, all the better. But you know, if you do, if time comes that you need to pursue that, there are several people that can give you some advice on how to go.
I should give myself my own advice in that regard too. Is when it comes to getting stuff done, you got to be seen. That's kind of probably the biggest hurdle for anybody, is just taking that brave step forward and putting yourself out there.
Yeah, it's
tough. What happens?
See, like you're saying, people are afraid of failing. You know, you get two people, and of course, there's some people I know who get all their relatives to give money and stuff like that, and all their friends and all that kind of stuff. But eventually, you've got to reach a place where it's more than those. You know, you've got to be able to do this, because we did that with Stabby Bunny. We did a couple of Kickstarters, and it really kind of helped. Help make things go.
And you got to be used to being told no, and that no is not really an indicator of your own quality, I suppose. It's just, it might not be the right time, the right place, or the right person. You know, it's a matter of getting all three of those things to happen at once.
Nope. You know what? It's something, you've got the process down as far as making the comic. And now the bad news is you have to learn other processes that...
I have to learn marketing, yeah. I'm told that quite often. Yeah, that's my kryptonite right now.
And social media, you've got to get the word out about it. All these things, you can't just make a comic anymore. You've got to be able to promote it and these kinds of things. So it's still a process.
Well, hopefully 2020 is my year where I master that a little bit better of getting a little bit more. And we'll say that this is the 1 week into 2020, and I'm doing my first interview that I've done. I haven't done an interview on anything for probably 8 years. So,
oh wow!
We'll say this, yeah. So that is kind of cool. This is the beginning of maybe first step forward. A little stick of dynamite that I needed.
Well, good. See, like Facebook is my favorite, but there are a lot of people who use Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, of course. All these kinds of good things are good places to go, and you know it's because I think you've got a good basis on which to draw people to your product, and I think it looks really good. You know, I think that. You know, I'm just convinced that this has an audience waiting to be found.
Well, I appreciate really that. Story. Thank you.
So, it's good stuff. I liked. Now, of course, now I got to ask, because this is obviously underway. You've kind of mentioned there's other projects you're working on as well?
Yeah.
You probably can't give a lot of information on it, but what can you tell us about them?
So the one I'm currently working on right now is an action horror, which I guess you could almost say that Infinity would... might be an action horror as well, but this one's got a little different vein to it. This was more of a question of, huge fan of horror movies all growing up in the 80s and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, you got your slashers and your murderous killers and your monstrous clans and all that stuff. And it just happened to be watching one of the remakes of The Hills Have Eyes that led to this. This is where I talk about ideas can just, I appear out of nowhere. And so while these like murderous creatures are harassing, you know, either the campers or the family touring cross country or whoever they're harassing, I always wondered, I was like, what happens if one of these days when these guys do this, they end up catching the caravan that has, or the campers that has John Rambo among them?
That would be wild.
So that question led to the creation of the title is called The Strong. And the way I basically pitch it is that it's The Hills Have Eyes versus Jason Bourne.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yep. Okay. That'll be different. I haven't seen that before. So I like that. I like different. I like, cause I've read a lot of stories over the years, and when I find something that's different, I like that. It's like it's like I think Infinity is that way. I haven't read this story before. I mean, I've read Dante's Inferno and stuff, but your take on it is unique, and it's engaging. You know, you feel about what's happening to them, like I said, and I'm just anxious to see. I'm really anxious to see the second one when that starts to happen. That'll be fun.
I'll give you a sneak peek of the first issue whenever it's compiled into a PDF before I even do anything with it. I'm going to just give you a sneak peek and let you take a look.
That'd be great. I'd like to do it. I had a guy that I had interviewed. He did a book. It was called Rust. And it was this great story of a father and son kind of setup. It was done as a video gamer was the guy who did it. And he was very nervous because the fourth and final volume was coming out. And they got me a PDF of the volume before it hit the streets. And I was going to interview him, and he was nervous about what I was going to think of it. He was a little scared, and he said to me, he's like, well, I'm a little nervous. I mean, well, what did you think? And I, of course, I loved it. I thought it was a fantastic. Everything hung together, and I told him, I said, man, you, I can't think of a better way to wrap this up than the way that you did that. And he was like, phew.
Well, that can be a nerve-wracking experience when you're coming close to that end and kind of going, oh, gosh, I hope I stick the landing.
Yeah, because the landing is just as important as taking off, you know, as far as...
Probably more so. You know, it's that whole, I mean, you know, not to beat a dead horse on this, with, I'm sure there's plenty of stuff online about it, but say, for instance, the Game of Thrones TV show, I mean, the way it kind of came in for its landing was a little rough.
Yeah, sputter. You know, sputter, plump, kind of stuff.
And unfortunately, that's what it's going to be remembered as. You know, probably one of the greatest shows to ever grace TV, and that's not what it's going to be remembered as.
No. I have my problem with the Marvel miniseries. They start with great big bangs, and oh my gosh, everybody's going, it's got to be good, you got to buy them. It's just fantastic, and then blug. Mm-hmm. And you get to the end, and I'm like, well, I didn't think that was very good, and usually they try to pull you into the next one, and I'm always like, you know, I like to see a conclusion every once in a while.
And that's, you know, that's sort of a and not to, you know, God knows I don't want to start a war with any creators out there in a sense, but it's that's, to me, what that is not thinking the story through long enough. That's basically, you catch people with a premise, but you don't give them a story. And a premise is not a story. You know, stories are about people. Stories are about emotions. Stories are about the struggle. It's not about, here's the idea, here's the premise. You know, it's probably just my opinion, but that's kind of where I
was working with some folks who wanted to write scripts for Star Trek fan films. And this one friend of ours was going on about it. He says, I've got a great story for like a fan film. It's the doctor on Voyager develops a cure for the phage, which was a destructive thing. Mm-hmm. And we sat there and went, and? And she was like, what? That's enough. I said, no, it's not. That's just the beginning. Where's the story? What's going to happen?
What's the conflict? You know, what happens when this cure is created that makes everything actually worse?
See, that's the thing. That's the thing. So you understand this stuff. That's the good thing, is you understand where we're going someplace. Like getting in a car and not knowing where you're going, you're just driving around. You know, when you know where you're going, and your book often does. That's why I'm excited to see the second one. I think it's going to be fun to see what you've got in mind for that. So. We mentioned social media and stuff like that. If somebody wants to keep up with what you're doing, are you on social media? Are there places people can go to follow your what you're up to?
Yeah, they can, as I say, once I start updating it more often, so they can find me on the WordPress site, which is chadstroll.wordpress.com. Or they can find me, I believe, Chad Mstroll Facebook. Which I think my Facebook link might be listed on the WordPress. Or if anybody happens to hear this and they can't find me in any other way, they can just chat Mstroll at AOL.com, and I'll, you know, give them an update and show them how to actually get somewhere to find me in other ways. And then, of course, through Caliber. If all things failing, contact Caliber. You'll know how to get a hold of me.
Now, maybe you should spell your last name just so people know how to find
that. It's Strohl. Yeah. And so the other thing, the book also can be found, as I said, it was listed on Barnes & Noble, it's on Amazon, and it's under Infinity, A Tale of the Inferno.
Very cool.
And here's one of the other quirky things about it is, be careful if anybody happens to look it up online, is there's a blurb running around out there that is not the book. There was a bit of confusion with Diamond Distribution, when it went out in previews, they put the wrong blurb on it. And then about 100,000 websites all grabbed off of that. And I spent about 3 weeks trying to contact each and every one of these websites. And it was like the mythological Hydra. It seemed like everyone that I could get to correct it, I found two more popping up. And be like, oh my gosh.
Oh no! All that time you could have been spent doing comic stuff instead of doing that. So,
Yeah. And then there was nothing that could be done because it was, you know, a lot of these other websites were just grabbing that information through the digital means in which they do it, I guess.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, the other thing we need to find out is conventions. I saw you at Baltimore. You're going to be back at Baltimore? Are there other ones that you've got ready for 2020?
So right now, all I have in on 2020, and I have my list handy. I'm not as handy as I would have liked it to have been. But so I'm scheduled for Gym City in Dayton, which is here in Ohio.
Okay.
And that's in April, so that will be, unless I can make it happen. So Andrea sent me information about Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay.
That's April 4th and 5th, so I'm going to try to hook that up, because I told him, I was like, you know, me and him need to hang out at mm-hmm. one of these conventions one of these days. So he sent me that, and I thought, all right, let's make that happen.
Cool.
So I'll probably do that and be under the Caliber banner then.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got Huntington in June. I don't have anything in May yet. Mm. And pretty much the middle of my year seems to be pretty open right at the moment. There's Cincinnati in September, and then New York Comic Con in October.
Oh.
So I'm still trying to fill in that middle a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Baltimore's always a good place to go because that's where there are a lot of comic creators. And things mm-hmm. happen behind the scenes at Baltimore, which is one of the great things about it. Of course, New York's the same. New York's my favorite. Although I went to Dragon Con for the first time in 2019, and I really liked it. It was amazing. I really liked that place.
You'll hinge a lot on this new publisher I'm working with Broken Icon. It's like they'll do a lot of shows, so I'll probably try to tag along under their heading for some, and then anything that Caliber throws up, if there's some opportunity through them, I may be able to jump on. So
very cool.
That's kind of what next year looks like so far. It's sort of a little bit up in the air on some things.
Well, hopefully I get a chance to meet you face to face and be able to say hi, because it's fun to talk with folks, but I like to also, you know, get to know the person, and because when I really like something, I tend to support it and tend to be behind it, and that's why Kickstarters, to me, I will look for people that I know on Kickstarter who are doing things that you know, stuff I really like. So
I will just share info of what cons we might be at this coming year, and maybe we can.
Yeah, the only one I know I'm going to is Emerald City. Up in Seattle.
Okay.
That's the only one we're confirmed so far. We always go to New York. We were in Artist Alley last year, and we did superbly well. So we're probably going to be at New York and Artist Alley. I hope. And
well, worst case scenario, that's where I'll find you then. So
okay.
You're going to be with Scout there then?
Well, oftentimes, Stabity Bunny has our own booth, and so I'll probably be...
Okay.
We get to Scout occasionally, but Scout was up in the small press part, and we were down in the Artist Alley. The cool thing about what happened was Artist Alley stayed open an hour longer than the upstairs
part. Yeah.
And that, you know, 7 o'clock, people were leaving and going to dinner, and this flood of people came in. Yeah,
where did they do Artist Alley last year? I know the year before they were doing construction out on that big hall that they used to be doing it at. Then they had it like downstairs. Did they do it there again last year?
That's where downstairs? It was downstairs. And it was, the good thing about it was, like I said, when they closed up that thing, people were looking for something to do, so they all came downstairs to the Artist Alley. And we did a lot of sales between 7 and 8 when the Artist Alley closed.
Yeah.
I'd like to go.
Yeah, I'm not sure which one I prefer. I mean, I know that big hall is like a bit of a walk way out of the way. You got to go down that like catwalk area and stuff, but it's so big. You know, it's cool. It's like a whole show in the show itself.
Yeah.
And then
it's cool stuff.
Well, the downstairs room, it's a little more packed.
Yeah. They used to have it in a separate building. That was the good thing about it. It was just massive when it was in the other building next door. But, you know, I still like New York. I still enjoy it because I think there's a lot of good things happen behind the scenes that people may not realize is going on. Connections, good things are going.
Mm-hmm.
People make stuff. So, well, Chad, I think you're doing the great stuff. I think the book is terrific, and I think I'm happy to see Andrea selling them. You know, out at Wizard World, and I'm sure he'll be selling a lot more of them because I think it's a great story, and it's a very unique take on that whole story. So I really liked it, and I can't wait to see the second one. When you get a chance to send me that first issue, I'd love to take a look at it. But
I appreciate you taking a read and kind of giving your feedback, and plugging it for me. I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's awesome.
It's easy to support quality, I always say, and that's what this is. This is a very quality bit of storytelling, and, you know, it's just you lose track of where you are. You're in the story. And that's a sign that a comic is well done. And I forgot where I was when I was reading this, so it was really well done and the great characters and stuff. So keep it up, and, you know, we'll have to talk again. Maybe when things start to percolate and some stuff that you can talk about some more, we'll chat again sometime.
I'd be happy to. That'd be amazing.
All right, well, we'll let you get back to reality, and just keep up the wonderful stuff. That's all I can tell you. You're doing good stuff, and you're doing the smart things, I think, so keep it up.
All right. Well, thank you, and you have a great weekend.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.